All right, we want to get started with our work session to give us time to go through and hear from those of us who were fortunate enough to go to San Diego to the National School Boards Convention. And so what I thought we'd do is we'd just, you know, go around and give each one of us a chance to share highlights and things that maybe are applicable to our situation and possibly things that we want to look at in more depth. So, you ready, Buck? Or should
I
call you? I'm on tape, so I can't. No.
Well, the first one that I went to was really related to post-COVID activity, and it was really talking about both teachers and students, but it really gave me cause to pause to wonder, how do we find out when a student is really struggling with that stress? But even more so for teachers, how do we find out if our teachers are really at their burnout status? Do we have those kind of communication links where that can be talked to with principals? Because usually there may not be a whole lot that we can do about it other than understanding, but to at least have somebody that you can confide in and be able to talk to about it without feeling threatened, because a lot of us feel like talking about that would be a weakness, would be a show of, hey, I'm not doing very well, I'm not handling this, I'm not capable, my mental status is low. So that was one of the
and sometimes
concerns.
Now that we're supposedly out of it, if you're not out of it yet,
right?
You know, I think that is the one. And I have some friends and I talked about it. How are we feeling now that we're supposedly out of it? We're afraid we're not out of it, and some of those feelings. And I think people do have that good forum.
Yeah.
I also worry about our principals. And
sure,
some
they're supposed to be able to take it, right?
Yeah,
our superintendent is supposed to be able to take it all and just keep going and going and going. So I think that was a lesson during that first workshop, is just to consider recognition and being able to freely talk about it in some way. And do we allow those groups to happen? You know, is there a point in a faculty meeting where you can just say, hey, let it out. Let's talk about what's your biggest frustration. Have you done well or not done well getting through this school year?
Did the presenters offer suggestions of how they handled it, or did they just...
You know, it seemed like the biggest message was try to utilize techniques to draw feedback out. So you didn't think everybody was okay when they weren't. How do you draw that out? That's probably a leadership skill.
Talk about it.
To talk about it and
give
offer some advice. But mental health coaching is not just for students. It's for the teachers as well. And, like you say, and even principals.
Yeah. Jeff and Superintendent, you can correct me on this. Isn't our health insurance motive, don't they have an option for you to contact a mental health counselor that, as a teacher or administrator, they can contact and get, I don't know how many or how it works. But
I don't think it's through motive, but yeah, we do have that.
But so we have something available.
Yeah, I think Morton's set it up through Cigna.
Maybe. Yeah, it's through Cigna.
Okay, so we do have something.
Yeah,
anytime, 24 hours, you pick up the phone, call, and talk to a counselor.
There's also a certain number of face-to-face interactions that they allow.
Is that well advertised?
How do we promote that?
Advertising it a bunch of times. I don't know.
We bring it up during the Wellness Month stuff, and it was well received this year.
Where
we do it as part of the start of the year orientation to insurance that we do with all the employees. We do it then.
Mm-hmm. And Larry, when you do talk about a solution or something they offer, well, typically the first thing we think about is that broad, let's hope we can pay them more. Let's hope we can work at our compensation so that
It was interesting that I was in that same presentation, and their explanation for higher pay, honestly, was the first time I've ever heard this explanation come from a state level or a national level organization. And it's just nationally, we have, because of the low wages, we have a lot of teachers who are working multiple jobs. They said we can raise wages to the point that a teacher who's trying to support a family doesn't feel they have to run more than one job, that will relieve a lot of stress and help cut down on burnout. So it was just interesting because I've
sense.
20 plus years doing this, and I haven't ever had someone say that's...
Yeah, and that's pretty private too, right? Yeah. I mean, if somebody's going in...
Do we have any way of knowing how many of our teachers are in that situation? I mean, that's a privacy thing, but I mean, you target those people.
Not very many, but it's almost like when we were going to school, you know, it was pretty easy to get a janitor job at night maybe somewhere and go in for a couple hours and clean an office or do some kind of an odd job to pick up some extra dollars. So hopefully it's very few of us that are having to do that. But compensation was one of those areas to consider. I guess it makes it a little more tolerable. It doesn't necessarily solve everything.
But just to reiterate what Frank said, one of the messages I picked up too was just of being aware. And then 2 years ago, so just before COVID, I did a seminar, a couple months long with ASCD, and it was about addressing teacher burnout and the solution, everything that they consistently talked about really is just opportunities to talk. Because they recognize you can't change a teacher's home situation. You can't, in many cases, we're limited to how much we can address compensation and working conditions. We do the best we can, but we do have resources. So how do we create opportunities for teachers to lean on one another, to get strength and support from one another? And really, it goes down to what you referenced, Frank, is just validating that the stresses are there. And, we're all dealing with it. So we might not be able to change a whole lot, but let's figure out
what resources might be available in the community.
You know, this how we reemphasize what we did during wellness. Like you said, validation and acknowledge that the stressors are there.
Yeah.
So, anything else on your...
Well, I think I mentioned this little slang to you that every child is your child.
And I love that.
Starting to talk about... the community at large knows that teachers and nurses are the top two that have been stressed to the max with COVID, right? But part of that discussion was about how can the community help us, help our teachers, but how do we create a forum to where they feel like every child is the community's responsibility? Because we get a lot of flack as a school district from a lot of people who are in this school district. And instead of giving negative, give us positive. Have some solutions. Help us here. Support us. Support our teachers.
Anybody can complain.
Yeah. It's really easy to pull a negative vibe. But somehow, with our marketing schemes that we work on,
that's something that, if it's a board in a district we choose, that we can emphasize repeatedly in different forums. And, I shared this with Frank, both Franks, but, Fred Rogers' quote about, we live in a time where we're only worried about our child. We don't want to take responsibility for the community. We don't want to take responsibility for the other. And Fred Rogers said, basically, those that do are my heroes, but encompass all of them. Every child's your child.
Yeah.
Or every child's our child.
Got to be an attitude.
Who are our kids? And I think that's the thing. Yeah. I think there's this tendency, and we heard it, that, those kids or whatever, and whether it's a teacher or a custodian or the board or the community, these are our kids, and how do we do that?
Yeah.
And expand upon that. All kids are our kids, not just in Logan School District. At least that's what I'd hope people would see. Any other highlights?
Those were just some of the main ones I wrote down beyond the pandemic.
We can come back to you. Christy?
Well, I apologize. Talking to Sean about the golf tournament, so I missed what he said, so I apologize if I repeat. It was interesting being there because I can see, obviously, that NSBA is struggling with their recent political drama, that there was less participation there, and I felt like the classes were a little bit less stellar than they have been in the past. So hopefully in time that people can rebound and see beyond that mistake and come back and, you know, they can rebuild trust in associations so that it can, you know, improve, you know, over time. But you can tell just by going into the breakout sessions where they used to be just packed with people, there just weren't as many as there have been in the past. So hopefully they can rebound. But I thought the keynote speakers were interesting. I thought the Sharp guy was kind of interesting. I don't see how he applied to education, nor do I see him helping education in the future come from what he came from, like the girl that did the Harlem to Harvard. Is that what she was?
Homeless to Harvard.
Mm. Homeless to Harvard.
Yeah.
I mean, she really is taking her life experiences and making a difference for others, where the Shark guy was like, look at me, I'm kind of cool. But
you know, I make this mistake every time that when I hear a speaker, I immediately go down and buy their book.
Oh.
And I bought two of those books about the Shark guy. And I got home and I emptied my stuff out and I thought, you know, which one of these two am I really going to attempt to read? And I haven't started either one, but I know where they are right now and they're probably going to stay there a while.
Oh, does he have two?
He has a couple of books that are out. Because he had caught up in his energy.
Yeah, he had good energy and good.
But I never watch the show.
Oh,
I hate
me
the show.
Either.
I don't like you, but I don't like any of the people on it. And they're gougers when they're, you know, out there working on these people. So that's interesting.
I don't even know who. I mean, I honestly thought it was going to be about, like, sharks. Like, shark animal, you know, mammals. But I
don't like that. When you watch,
yeah, kind of, but
these sharks swimming in the water, and these poor guys are beat them up and get as much as they can out of them.
Anyway, but I mean, I think that anyway. But I really did enjoy the Homeless to Harvard. She was phenomenal, and I appreciate that she, you know, really is Liz Murray. Is that her name, Liz Murray? That she's really trying to, you know, do better and be better and try to build up her community that she came from. I thought it was an interesting part of her conversation. I don't know if you guys caught it, but how when she decided to go to school that she couldn't find an education facility to give her an education. People turned her away. And I thought about that. I'm like, why would they turn her away? I mean, what was so bad about her that they said, we're turning you, you can't come here? I mean, were they full? Was she going to charter? Was she going to private? What was it about her that made her not educatable in the eyes of the people that she met?
Could have been a question of where's your home address?
Could have been.
She left the questionnaire blank.
Could have. I mean, she never really indicated what the reason behind that was, but, you know, it kind of made me feel, as I thought about it, how as we, as a district, we accept anybody. I mean, you come to our district, and no matter what your circumstances or where you've been or, you know, what your level of education is or, you know, what your nationality is, we're going to welcome you in and hopefully, you know, build a relationship with someone in the school that will let you flourish and develop in the school. So, you know, I was grateful to be able to kind of apply that concept into our own district about how we don't turn people away. Love the Fred Rogers thing. That was also very good. I really liked this application about Fred Rogers and how we all need to be a little bit more kind to those people around us. I think the biggest break, I went to the class on being four today about preschool, and the importance of preschool, and I appreciate the choir here. We all understand how important preschool is, but it was interesting how they talked about, and I don't know that we have exactly the right environment or right structure to be able to do what they did, but they broke each of their classrooms into six breakouts and six rooms, so each room had their maximum number of kids in it. So room one was dinosaurs, room two was like home to, or harvest to home, and room three was like space, and then every 6 weeks they all switched, rotated. And it was all very hands-on, engaging activities, but it was kind of like connecting four-year-olds to their world around them, which I thought was a very fascinating idea, but you'd have to have enough capacity in your building to be able to put six rooms in and rotate, you know, 24 kids in each one, and it was a very interesting logistical arrangement that they had, but they built most of the stuff, the teachers built most of the stuff they used in the classroom with just software and home rule, everyday items. They didn't have to spend a lot of money on it, but I showed some pictures, it was kind of interesting about how they engaged their theater department to build props for preschools. Well, that's a good idea. They used leftover props from productions to be able to put in preschools to be able to incorporate those kind of things and make their environment more like a hands-on museum type of thing. And the other class that I went to, I talked to Frank just a little bit about this, was the onboarding and keeping our employees. They talked a lot about how you know, can offer a stipend to employees if they give you a year notice if they're going to leave. So then it gives you a chance to find a suitable replacement, as well as if you have someone in-house, they could kind of go in and role model, or not role model, but follow them, or, you know, be mentored through that year so they can kind of have an understanding of what's been happening in the past. And then it kind of helps them. Obviously, that may not happen all the time because you may not have an immediate replacement in the building, but at least it kind of gave them a chance to find the right candidate over time versus being in a pinch where you have to find it last half a year. Other thing was that they really did push having aides and former teachers, you know, like even like custodians, lunch ladies, people that were in the system. They were really trying to like mentor them and help them to eventually take licensure to get teaching licenses. And they really push like in-house learning and academics so that you're always hiring and promoting from inside your own ranks. And they had to bring in a few people occasionally, but they really did focus on, you know, mentoring and keeping their employees. The other thing, I don't know, I talked also about Frank about this, but they compared, I don't even know how you do it. They took the salaries of each school and compared how much they spent per student, and then they compared it to their test scores. So they're saying if you have high if it's a highly paid school, normally your thought would be that you would have high test scores. And they said usually what happens is the lowest paid school usually has the lowest test scores.
And that would be the newer teachers versus teachers who run the higher levels mm-hmm. of the salary schedule.
Yeah, and they did a thing where they did incentives to say, okay, well, these three schools are our lowest academically performing schools, and I think we've talked about this in the past.
Yeah.
These are the lowest performing schools, therefore we're going to offer, okay, if you decide to stay in the school for 5 years, then you get an extra
incentive
to stay there for 5 years.
Loyalty.
Yeah, loyalty thing to stay at that school.
It's a challenging call.
Yeah.
Challenge pay.
Yeah. And then they say you can't transfer. They don't do in-house transfers unless it's academically best for students. If it's based on want, and if it's equal, you know, they can equally go to another school based on, you know, it's not going to significantly impact the school, then they'll let them transfer. But otherwise, they really don't allow too many transfers within school. So it was interesting. There's a book on that too. I can pass that to you if that's something you're interested in reading about. But they had some really good thoughts on making sure that we are really providing. But I would be interested to see that, if you could somehow figure out how to compare costs associated with test scores. That'd be something you'd have to figure out in your spare time, Jeff.
We could run that at the district level. For a while, there were people at the state level doing that same thing, and if you try to do it across the state, it causes some real problems, because you'll have, you know, a tiny elementary school in Garfield that will have an incredibly high cost per pupil because they're really small, and you know, you're still paying your professional costs for your staff. But within a district, I mean, you could identify some patterns there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily wouldn't want to have it legislated to us, but I certainly think that it would be interesting just to see if we're putting our resources where our most need is. So it was great. Thank you all for a fun time.
Thank you.
It was a nice time. And thank you, Rachel. Everything was perfect. You made all the arrangements just right, so thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry.
Jeff, your highlights?
Yeah.
Besides the street tacos.
So, what's that?
Oh, those are so good.
I didn't think about that. Where are we going?
Here we go.
So, yeah, Damon John, there was one thing that I liked that he said, is that he said data doesn't change people, experiences do. Mm. I thought that was relevant to what we're doing. It was interesting that, you know, our parent feedback meeting, that was one of the, that was the third major questions. What are quality experiences? What are you, you know? And so, anyway, I thought that was a really something that kind of caught my attention. And I, like Christy, I struggled with some of the meetings that I went to. So the first one, I went to three different classes and finally ended up in one. And it's like, well, we're halfway through, and they just weren't, you know, they weren't what I thought, or they weren't, I wasn't really getting much out of them. So I went to another one. And so in the third one, it was interesting. One of the things that she said, she was talking a little bit about the pandemic, and she said Hurricane Katrina put the students in New Orleans and Louisiana in kind of the same boat. She said they were behind by a year after the Hurricane Katrina hit, because it was all cleaning up and trying to. And she said and they tried all kinds of things to try to get them to catch up, but she said those kids never caught up. And so, as I looked at the pandemic, I thought, you know, I've kind of been thinking about that, even with like all the kids, that I think one way that we maybe could help, at least with the secondary, is through concurrent enrollment and BTEC. So they're, you know, I've been trying to get my son into concurrent enrollment and BTEC and get some college credit. I'd like to have him have an associate's degree when he graduates from high school. That's just, it's amazing to me how much I have to fight counselors and like, just not that mindset. Oh, well, that's really hard and this and that. And I'm like, well, my understanding is rich high school, 75% of their kids graduate with an associate's degree. So if they can do it there, it doesn't seem like it would be that tough. I mean, we got BTEC right here, we've got, you know, you've got all these resources, and it's just a mindset. And I thought, you know, for him, he's a really good student, and I'm like, you know, you really, there's no reason for you to take, if you can take college classes now, there's no reason for you to just repeat those and pay for them later. And so, anyway, that was one thought that I had as far as helping kids to catch up, if we can do some of that, at least with our secondary kids, and push that a little bit to help them to, either through BTEC or concurrent enrollment, to get kind of 2-for-1 credits. But anyway.
You can have school choice.
What's that?
You can always come to Logan High. Just saying.
Yeah, we should clarify the recording. Fighting counselors about this is not happening.
Yeah, there you go.
My son goes to Mountain Crest, so I've been fighting my battle there. Thank you, Frank. That is something that I'm fighting at Logan High. So they also, like I said, I went to several others, and I had one on liability, and I thought it would be really good. And just basic, I mean, stuff that they're just kind of reviewing basic stuff that we all do anyway, and I didn't really get anything great out of that. But one that I really liked was put on by Future Ready Schools. And that one, it was interesting. You know, they said some of the things that I liked. They said every interaction that we have is either a culture builder or a culture killer. Culture is built 30 seconds at a time. When you walk into a building in your district, do you build the energy up or do you suck the air right out. That's interesting, you know. When we go into buildings, I think we need to have that in mind. And then it says, how do you create a culture where people want to be? They went into several different areas, but one was technology. They said technology and innovation do not go hand in hand, and devices don't educate. Three things that work are interactive learning, use of technology to explore and create, not to drill and kill, and the active use, not the passive use. So coding and immersive simulations, things like that, that technology can do really well. We need to use it actively and not just passively say, yeah, you've got your laptops or you've got your, you know, Chromebooks or whatever, and so just passively let them just use those to do whatever. We need to be getting an active and interactive learning. And it was interesting, too, they said 3 years from now we will face a fiscal cliff when the federal funding is gone, because we've gotten all the ESSER. It'll take us that far, and so I think most of the things that we've planned have been, you know, things that, but we do have some, you know, additional days and stuff like that that we need to make sure that if we're not able to continue to fund those, that people are prepared to say, yeah, that's going to be, you know, it's going to have an impact, and so.
Which is why we've avoided hiring people using those funds. There's an article, the national papers just a week ago, or 2 weeks ago, was making that point. Yeah, districts that have hired people using ESSER funds for another year are going to have a whole bunch of people getting let go, which is going to change both life for those people, but it's also going to change the service model in the schools that they become dependent on. So we've really tried to avoid that, but you know, but then when everybody sees a little drop because of days,
lots of training days, and so you know.
Is that the expiration of the ESSER 3 years out totally? They're just talking ESSER, right?
No other federal. Yeah, it's just the additional ESSER funds that they've given us, but they, you know, they expire, and so that was interesting.
By building facilities rather than hiring people to run facilities, it's been a good thing to do.
And I think, like the rest of you, I'm just very inspired by Liz Murray's story. I took a ton of notes on that one, and it's just amazing, the whole story. And I still haven't watched that documentary, but I want to, because I don't know, how do you see how other people grow up and how they live and how, you know, how you make it at all through that, much less make it to Harvard. I mean, you know, just amazing, you know, that one principal.
Yeah.
You see the impact of, like, Arthur, the one guy,
yeah.
You know, just... And then that one principal, after she gone to all those schools and they all turned her down, and she said, you know, when you're in that situation, you reject people before they can reject you. And he was able to see through that and say, no. And, but he told her, he said, you're going to have to work harder than you ever have in your life. But if you're willing to do that, then we're willing to take you on and work with you. And I just thought, you know, one person can make a difference. And that was just an amazing story.
Did any of you look her up? Like Google search her name.
No. Anything else?
No.
She's pretty rough looking when she was. I mean, there's some.
She's living in hell.
Yeah, I
know.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, my goodness, she did definitely have some obstacles.
Superintendent.
Number of presentations just reminded me why we're doing some of the things we're doing. We went to a great presentation on helping turning around high poverty schools. All stuff we're on track on, some good reminders of what next steps need to be or things that we can tighten up. Attended a presentation that was all about parent liaisons and went in and saw what this school district was doing. And again, something we already have, but a good reminder of the importance of going back and re-emphasizing with everyone why we have the parent liaisons and making sure that they, anytime you put a person into a school office, there's the tendency for it to get drawn into tasks just because there's so much going on. And those positions really need to be focused on building relationships with parents, and we need to look a little bit, you know, how we can expand that with our parent liaisons. We have the same challenge that we did with our coaches. The parent liaisons are all paid out of Title I funds. So if we're going to do a can't do the same position at our secondary schools without assuming the cost of the elementary paraliaisons as well. So I've been talking to Jed a little bit about that, see if we can figure something out. Because the need for homes for parent-school links doesn't go away when students go into secondary school. So, that's something we've got to look at a little more.
Land trust funds for it, does that make it okay?
Yeah, land trust funds, so because it's school-based.
Using a different school-based instead of a district-based.
It's a school-based fund. If it's a district-based fund, then it's supplanted.
Okay.
So we're playing stuff. I'm looking at, okay, what if we... Can we change the position title?
Mm-hmm.
Can we rewrite the job description and make that work? So
outreach.
We're just looking at some ways that we can build on that.
And it may be more critical in secondary just because of what Jeff mentioned earlier, to make sure that those students are aware of opportunities that are at the school.
Yeah.
And sometimes language barrier can prohibit them from participating.
Yeah. But they shared an example. It's a district that was right down there close, and they have... It's a K-8 district. They have students from lots of different countries. But they had some students who had gone to visit family in Afghanistan before the U.S. pullout. And they found out that some of them were stuck there. And they started finding out over time, they had about 23 students who were stuck in Afghanistan with their parents. And they found out, because these parents contacted the school's parent liaison and let them know what was going on. So then the school district reached out to their state senator and said, hey, we need your help. We've got to get these families. And the guy said, we've been trying to get them out. They won't answer our calls. We'll contact them and say, hey, meet us this place this time. We can get you out. But they don't know us, so they don't trust us. So that started a six-month process of the school and the parent liaison working with the federal government to communicate with these families so they could... So they can get them out of Afghanistan.
And they know the number and they trust it.
Yeah, they knew it. So it was all about those relationships. So again, reminders of things, okay, we're doing that. Are we sticking as tight to the original purpose of that as we need to be? How can we keep in emphasizing that? The burnout one was great. The one by Jordan District on their podcast, Shanna had actually spoken to me about that about a month ago. And she encouraged me to go attend that one. So she and I have been talking about ways that we think we might be able to build on that. And of course we're one of the reasons we have Eric coming over here to the district office next year, so we can develop and grow our own program.
Mm-hmm.
And get more of our students from Logan High interested in education, get more of our parents who are volunteering or working in the schools as aides to be thinking about the licensure program, partnering preferably with USU, but I think Davis is working with Western Governors and with Weaver to do the same thing. So a lot of good reminders of what we can do with things that we have in place, but we need to clean up our next steps to strengthen them and do them a little bit better.
That it?
Yeah.
Okay. A couple things. I printed out a couple things that stood out. I mean, like Jeff and Christy said, And Bucks also mentioned it, the description in the program didn't always do a good job of telling you what you were going to hear. And out of the eight sessions I attended, three out of the eight I thought were useful in terms of bringing back things that I would like to see for my own self go in more depth. One that Greg was also in dealt with early literacy, and I've shared this with the superintendent. That's one of the printouts. It was Palo Alto School District in California, across the street from Stanford, and they have $28,000 per student. They have a lot of resources. We don't. But they spent the time in the conference talking, or about the breakout session, about acknowledging that early literacy was a big deal and something they needed to improve on. It wasn't until I got into their document that they stated the district, and that's where this is copied from, that kind of said what they're doing. And I've shared this with superintendent. We've had discussions, and these are things that we're doing just under different tools that are identified here. Acadience, I can't remember what they used, that you and I talked about. But
mm-hmm.
And I think Jed tonight's going to talk about, correct, some elementary assessment.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just the importance of early literacy, and Greg and I had a discussion after it. You know, it's so foundational that if you aren't literate early, you're going to struggle. And the superintendent's brought this up before, even if you go to BTEC and you're in a mechanics class, if you can't read the manual, you're going to have a tough time. So I'd like us to continue our focus. I'd like us to continue our focus on early literacy. We're doing some things right now, starting next year, in terms of class size reduction.
Yeah, we're using Title I funds to lower our class sizes in K-1-2.
And some ESSER funds, too.
We're using some ESSER funds with that. The Jed was on a call with the state today. All K-3 teachers statewide will be doing letters next year.
Oh, wow, so we're ahead.
So it won't just be select districts. That was by legislation, so that's going to be happening. We're working with Ray Reitzel and Parker Fossen this right now on training our coaches and teachers on early literacy practices. We've got the collaboration time at the end of every day, elementary, for teachers to be working in teams on what they can do there. So we're putting a lot of energy into that the early literacy arena to.
Will that continue, Superintendent, for next year?
Yeah, that will be going on next year.
Okay.
Teachers are 50-50 on it, but the schools.
No,
the schedule that we currently use with the 45 minutes collaboration at the end for elementary teachers. The schools that are using it effectively are seeing great outcomes. Teams that are using that time to collaborate, their student achievement just keeps going up.
Nice.
So we're going to keep it.
But won't be doing it secondary, correct?
Not secondary. I've told the principals we won't do that unless at least like 70% of their staff say we want to do this, and they got to come to us first.
Okay.
Along with this early literacy from the superintendent in California, he really hammered on you're consistently reviewing results, and based on those results, you're revising, and then you start the cycle over again. You just don't implement a program and say, we've done it. You're constantly revising based on the needs of your students that are based on the data that you collect. And he talked about you need to prioritize your resources. You need to implement with diligence. And I really enjoyed the emphasis on early literacy. Of course, I've lived with a early childhood educator for 30 years, and it was actually beneficial that she and I shared a lot of. I'd go back at night and say, what about this, and educate me, teach me things about what we're doing or have done, and what do you see we could do. And I've shared those with the superintendent, so that was a highlight. The other highlight, actually, were two sessions. The other piece of paper that I gave you talks about Portrait of a Graduate. Portrait of a Graduate is something the state of Utah has done. I looked at Portrait of Graduate the state of Utah has. It's a rather broad, extensive Portrait of Graduate. The two sessions that dealt with this, they basically talked about having input from throughout the community to develop the competencies that we as a community think our high school graduates should have. And a lot of them were based on the four C's, critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity. And then each community, depending on what they identified, came up with other factors: resilience, empathy, compassion, lifelong learning. But it was tailored to the community. And that was something that intrigued me. And like a couple of you, I bought books, and one it was called Redefining Student Success. And I read that the week we got back, and I've given it to Frank. But it's Portrait of a Graduate is basically emphasizing 21st century skills for our graduates and involving community and students in developing the school district's portrait of a graduate. And they emphasize the importance of involving students and teachers and parents and business leaders, all-encompassing. And they said one of the benefits of that inclusion of all these stakeholders was they were part of developed Portrait of a Graduate. They bought into it. They had ownership. And so the one guy, I can't remember which one, basically said we needed more resources. We were able to go to the community and say, we need your support, businesses. We need you to provide internships. And because they involved the business in defining portraits of graduate, the businesses were on board and said, yeah, we could help do that. And that obviously spoke to me as a, you know, school to careers and that background that I've got. They also talked about the role of the school board in allowing and encouraging parent engagement. Talked about the importance of strong governance. Liberating teachers to do the work. It's called the Green Light Philosophy. The book talks about how your teachers and your staff need to feel like they have the ability to experiment and fail instead of being feeling like they can't use the creativity and explore. Obviously, there are guidelines, but the green light culture was big, and that was, I don't know if Buck has got to that part of the book yet. But, you know, there are a lot of things in A Portrait of a Graduate that I'm looking into in more detail. That was probably the highlight, along with the early literacy, for me. And I'll be quiet. If you have any questions about them, you know, I'd love to share it with you. But I want to give Greg a chance to share with us what his thoughts were on those days. Other than we appreciate all the companionship and partnership and food, and so.
I guess I came from it thinking that we were doing pretty good compared with some of the others that I heard all the stories from. I was going to have to figure out how to choose my sessions a little more carefully, because it seemed like I ended up in some and I was going, this wasn't what I expected at all. And so I was disappointed with a few of them. And I didn't bring my notes with me, but off the top of my head, I'm having a hard time finding something that I found that I could say, boy, that's something really, really new that I would like to go back and explore. I do remember talking in one of those sessions about getting the community involved and thinking that, you know, with the definite need for employees nowadays, I mean, the guys down at the job service the other day told me that they had 2,000 jobs listed at job service here in Logan, trying to find people. 2,000. When he told me that, he says, and we don't get all of them. I mean, we know we only get a percentage. And I says, what percentage? Well, I don't know. It could be 50. It could be 70. I don't know. But so there's even more than that available out there. And I just was thinking, there ought to be some way, especially with these kids that are doing tech stuff out of Bridgerland, that we can't get some of our employers here in the Valley that need, you know, machinists, that need programmers, that need people like that, to not come to our high school and help us in developing some programs so that those kids can, they can tap into them now.
Internships and other things.
And just get them employed, you know, while they're going through school, and get them so that they get, because they can't find them. They've got to find them. And that's the best place to find them, is at that very early stage.
And
I would think we could find, plus, I mean, I've got to spend some time making some phone calls and talking to some people at some of the places that I know. And just saying,
where it's like Cytiva that's expanding.
I guess we,
Campbell's expanding.
Campbell's, I mean, there's a great one that could really be a great employer for kids who want to stay in the Valley, you know.
And
there's just lots of them. I mean, I'm absolutely flabbergasted at the number of little businesses out there that the kids can get involved with. And you know, I don't know, maybe we've got to look at our offerings at the high school and what we're doing so that they match up and maybe use the Bridgerland more, or even the university more,
you know,
with some of that.
Custom fit at Bridgerland is kind of tailored for that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly
what. But, you know, in sitting in that session with you, thinking about Campbell and Cytiva, have we communicated with them? to let, have them tell us, what are the skills that your employees need, that our kids are graduating from high school that don't, they don't have them.
They don't fit.
Because I would think most, and not ever being in the private sector, I would think that most businesses would love it, rather have us in education provide basic skills so they don't have to train and spend a lot of money on the training if we already have graduates graduating with those skills. That gives them a heads up on the, I mean.
Anyway, I don't know, you know, and it's, how to start that.
It's interesting because when I was on the Bridgeland board, we talked about them as soft skills. You saw that with the proposed dress code today, and they preface it with, to help students realize what will be, you know, required or suggested to them as professionals. And I just think if a lot of things, if we can do it with our students, that this will help you get a better job, this will help prepare you. And we don't call them soft skills anymore because they're not soft skills, they're really important skills.
But have the community help us identify what it is that they're looking for in a graduate. But, you know, and then again, the thing that really stood out to me is because they were involved in that process, they had bought into what was going on in the district, and I'm thinking from our own, they're less likely to be down on us if they're involved in helping us move forward.
I think a bully, if we needed some stuff for our chemistry labs, you know, and we had some of these guys, they'd say, hey, yeah, if you need some microscopes for virology, we'd love that, or for this biology, I guess you can't see virology with microscopes, but.
The one district that, Val Verde, I don't know if you were in that one. Val Verde is in Central Riverside.
I think I was there.
But they have their own vineyard.
No.
Not that we're going to have a vineyard, but their point was they did the science, the soil science and the chemistry, and then.
You know, our outdoor thing up in the canyon.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing, I went to this one, it was on ecology, and it ended up being all about environmental science stuff and everything, and I went, okay, I'm not sure that was what I was hearing. But the one thought I did have was that they were talking about getting kids so that they could get out and view the what happens out in a environment like that. And then study the changes that happen with runoff and everything, and have them have an opportunity to be exposed to environmental engineering, basically. And I thought, man, I would, you know, that resource would be perfect for something like that.
Hands on, get out of the classroom, apply what you learn in the classroom.
Yeah, and I think we can. I think we can do that with fourth graders.
Oh,
I mean, you know, I think we can do it with all kinds of ages up there, and just let them really have a hands in the dirt moment, you know, and go up there and plant stuff and see if it grows in that environment and what did they do wrong or whatever. And
the frost hits on September 1st.
Yeah, what happens? You know, I mean, what happens? Why wouldn't that?
Yeah.
I just think there's a lot of great potential for that. I never really saw the vision of it. I just thought you'd go out there and look at the birds and the trees, you know, hike up the canyon like I used to do as a kid. But, boy, there is a lot of
connections.
Really good science that we can teach in that environment.
Yeah, we kind of have a blank canvas up there. I mean, we've got to work on the facility because we got to spend the money to get that, but programming, I think, I'm excited about it.
That's where we turn our instructors loose and let them be creative in creating things up there that they, you know, that I can't do it, but they sure can.
We're taking a group of teachers up this Friday afternoon. Snow's finally melting enough, we can get walk around.
Friday afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Buck and I have a commitment from Mark Felstead, because Buck changed the subject, thankfully. That we're going to rent some e-bikes from the Sportsman and take the e-bikes up behind the Outdoor Learning Center. Mark said we could do that. But anyway, you know, the other thing about the business involvement, I got on the Chamber of Commerce website to look at all the members. I had no idea some of the businesses we have in Cache Valley. The battery business.
Yeah.
Cytiva.
You know, I got a good friend who's an engineer out there, and I think, you know, if we want, I mean, tie into Bridgerland? Because those guys are going to be dying for people that can come out of Bridgerland to help them manufacture out there.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of high-end manufacturing that they're going to be doing out there.
Yeah, I was excited. That was, like I said, those two things were the things that got me the most excited. And if I had to, you know, reading a book like that after I retire, that has to say something, because my reading list isn't usually that.
I went to that same class. I didn't realize you were in there, the portrait graduate.
Yeah, there was two of them. And obviously the organization, the Battelle for Kids, is an organization selling this.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the book, but
yeah.
There were things in there. I thought, this kind of makes sense. And it was at JUAP, and their superintendent now is at
Canyons
now. But he started JUAP. They actually mentioned JUAP district within the book. But they had examples throughout the country of how they've utilized this concept. And it was not the achievement gap, they call it the readiness gap.
Yeah.
We've got to close the readiness gap to have our graduates ready for career or college.
Which includes you need to graduate from high school.
It does.
You know, but there's a reason for that high school graduation.
What UAB is doing right now with their portrait of a graduate, they've realized, they've decided they need to take the indicators in the portrait of a graduate, and they need to start breaking it down by grade level. So what do these things look like at the end of first grade? What do they look like at the end of second grade, et cetera? So otherwise, it just looks like an end of the road indicator, and no one knows what their role is in accomplishing that. So those are the conversations they're having right now as a community, is what does this look like at each grade band, and how do we promote it?
Did that superintendent, when he went to Canyons, is he taking that portrait of a graduate? He's probably waiting a while before he...
That's a lot bigger
district
to do. So I think he's...
I just wonder if that's on his... If he thinks, values it enough, that that's something he'd like to see.
I think he values it enough. I think they've been dealing with COVID and library book protests.
and not portrait of a graduate.
And that stuff. I don't think portrait of the graduate has quite risen to the...
Which isn't that sad that we get involved in them and we get bogged down in the minutia.
But I know Rick is invested in the idea.
That's kind of what I was after being interested in talking to him.
I was just going to say in that class too, they also said that you need to evaluate what practice you as a district, what practices we've been doing, because you shouldn't be doing the same things you've done since 1982. You've got to stop doing stuff that you did 30 years ago, and you have to adapt your curriculum, adapt your...
Yeah, we're not an agrarian society anymore. And not only portrait of a graduate, the book also talks about developing a portrait of an educator.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot in the book. It's not going to be a one-year thing.
Sure.
But no, you're right. We have to evaluate, is this really what our students need?
District needs.
You know, I always go back to math experiences for me. When did I ever use that applied linear algebra? But I don't think I'll get that. But that's the point.
Well, and Larry, also with the change in our population, the importance of English, being able to speak English.
The literacy. It goes back to that's why we've got to start.
Right, and that emphasis, you know, having read a lot of land trust plans, how are we reaching that element where we've had some challenges? Because they come in new every year. And so I think those are great ways to get us to how do we get every student.
And I think the superintendent, at least the conversation I think we've had, is that as a board, we can give some direction to our community councils and say, this is our emphasis. We want your land trust plans to emphasize literacy. And if it doesn't emphasize literacy, then we as a board can say, go back and focus on literacy instead of buying 90 Chromebooks because you have extra money. Is that safe to say?
We can't dictate the specific expenditures, but we say, look, as a district, This is our priority, because this is our demonstrated need from the data, and we really want a consistent district-wide focus on how do we build this. And then principals take that back and work with the councils to plan it out.
They did.
One last thing, National Honor Society, it goes back to somebody mentioned earlier. We sat at a table, and it was a very nice evening. The young woman at our table was going to graduate from Logan High with, I think, 28 credits from Utah State. And I'm thinking, and I asked her, concurrent credits? She said, no, broadcast classes. I can't remember how many broadcast, because I said, oh, so we're doing video production concurrently. Daryl said, no, no, no. It's the broadcast, like Rich County. And she,
nice.
I got the impression her background was somewhat similar in the homeless to Harvard, that she hasn't had a steady adult influence, but somebody's gotten her and said, you need to do this. She's going to basically have an associate's degree. But it,
and then her scholarship's going to be good because of that.
And I turned to Daryl, I says, so how many of our students do take advantage of that? And he says, not enough. And it goes back to what we've said, that how many of our seniors get through their first semester and only have one or two credits, and so they only take one or two classes instead of, I can take this broadcast class and get Utah State credit for the same cost, I think, is concurrent.
Mm-hmm. You do it for a fraction of the cost.
$25 just to be.
And she was getting her general eds. I mean, she was inspiring.
So that's something we're trying to do early, because we do still see that we have many students who aren't taking advantage of the opportunities that our structure at Logan High provides. One of the reasons why we have the schedule and the structure that we do there is to open opportunities for students to take more concurrent, more BTEC, more AP classes than they were taking before. And we've seen students take advantage of that. You know, the students, you know, like the one you described, the students who've completed the robotic certifications. We've had a couple over the last few years. You know, these are students who are saying, oh, the flexibility in the schedule now allows me to take more of these courses that I'm really interested in and get further down this path. But we still have a lot of students who aren't taking full advantage of that yet. And so the high school is working on how do we get more kids doing this and engaging in it, and how do we help them see, you know, it's like when we first went down to Tour Innovations years ago, and he mentioned, you know, the students who will graduate, say, I need to graduate early so I can go start working. And they'll say, well, what if I could give you a $15,000 scholarship? I'm like, really, you can do that? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I didn't give them a scholarship. They stayed here, and we got them enrolled in college programs. So I didn't actually pay anything for it, but they just weren't looking at it through that lens. So how we got to get more students recognizing the options that are there, whether it's through the university, BTEC, or RCTE courses.
And we ask our counselors to do a lot, but maybe another target of our parents. Because if I have a teacher or a counselor come to me and say, you know, Taylor or Bobby could take these classes for this much and get Utah State credit, I'd have been all over it because of the money savings.
Well, the other thing, Larry, is if you could say to me, your child would be really good in this, you know, this class of mine, so did you know you can take three classes at Bridgerland between your senior year and when you go to college,
right. And
you could take all of this summer.
Pathways.
But I think it takes not just a counselor who says, well, you have lots of opportunities because they have so many opportunities. But if each of our teachers can know somewhat of the pathways that they have, because I really wish my kids had taken classes at Bridgerland that summer after graduation, because it's free.
One last highlight, National Honor Society. 5 years ago, my last year teaching, 2017, I had a student that I nominated for the Foundation Scholarship. Wayla, Myanmar, Burmese refugee. She spent 8 years in a refugee camp. Family came to Logan. I had her in Econ 1500, hardest class I ever taught. She worked her tail off, got an A in it. I saw her at National Honor Society. Her sister was being honored. And I said, Wayla. And she's, Mr. Williams, I just graduated from Utah State in elementary ed.
Oh.
And she said, I'm going to Thailand to teach for 2 years. And then I said, okay, Wayla, after 2 years, you need to come back and teach in our school district. And I gave her my card and said, because you are who we need.
Yeah, sure. We need those role models.
Yeah.
And I was so, I told the superintendent, I was so
pumped. Highlight of your life.
Oh.
That's exciting.
Did you have something
payback
that you wanted to add, Frank?
We should share that with the foundation.
you know, it seems like the challenge we're always having is career exploration. You know, most of us, when we get out of high school, we don't have a clue what we're going to do. You know, our parents have told us it's always go to Utah State or whatever like that. But like Greg just said, there are over 2,000 jobs available that are high paying, high demand.
Yeah.
And we had a high school welding competition earlier this week, and we had 95 high school kids come. And they were just all pumped and excited. You know, they're competing against each other. They've got different things. The ones who didn't successfully complete the entire project, they were good welders, but they couldn't read the plans.
Oh, wow.
They couldn't read a set of plans. So there are skill sets, you know, that if they get those, they can come out of high school and be a welder and make $30 an hour, just like that.
So I'm
wondering, are there ways, you know, we mentioned those jobs, because I'm just thinking about do we need to do more to help our high school juniors and seniors see this? So I'm thinking, it sounds like a very old school approach, but a job fair where we contact these specific companies where we have the 2,000 jobs, the high paying companies, and we say, come into the gym, come into the Crimson Gym, set up a table, we're going to let juniors spend half the day.
Yeah,
if you can walking around juniors and seniors, and it's just if we can set it up, we say you come in here, find something you're interested in, and now in a couple weeks we're going to have registration, and counselors are going to know that you've been through this, and they're going to ask a question: was there anything in there that you thought was particularly interesting? And if so, guess what? Here's some classes. We can sign you up for next year.
And then if we
can, I don't know if seen if sophomore
that, those people from that school or from that job back into our schools to present in some of those classes when they're studying certain course parts of the course. You know, if I'm in studying virology, in one of our biology classes, let's bring the Cytiva boys in that have been working on the Moderna vaccine and let them talk about that process and what was involved there, and so that they can get a hands-on with these kids and have them kind of tutor us a little bit on what we should be talking about in that particular part of our coursework. Yeah. I guess. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to do that part.
In Northern Utah,
we've got to go beyond just having you at a fair and saying, boy, I'm interested in that. I think we've got to keep that connection to that employer out there. And I really think they want to, because I think they want to see that bright, smart kid from that science class. They want him to come out, and they can put him in the lab right now. When he graduates from high school, they can put him in the lab, help him pay for school, and tie into that kid so that, you know, when he gets through, they've got an employee.
The great thing about a job fair, though, is that in Northern Utah, we are the master of having no idea what's going on in these buildings around Northern Utah. We have no clue.
Yeah.
And the high school kids don't have any idea what Cytiva is. Cytiva is hiring 250 kids
with a great signing bonus.
With a signing bonus.
Aaron's,
but nobody knows what Cytiva does. That's why the job fair for juniors and seniors would be such a great idea if you would dedicate a day or a half a day with the expectation that they come.
You know, and we need to promote with these parents on like the dual language. I mean, those kids will come out of high school, they take two classes at Utah State, and they'll have a minor in Portuguese or Spanish. Two classes is all they've got to take. They have a minor in one of a language like that. Slap that on your resume, and suddenly now you've got employers, I mean, worldwide wanting you, especially with those language skills.
So if we were to set a goal, let's say over the summer, we spent some time reaching out or looking at these companies that are doing the major job searching, and we identified what they do, what they specialize in. And then we took that to departments at the high school and the middle school and said, okay, these are companies that are hiring. This is what they do. Where does that link to what you're doing in the curriculum, because none of us are going to know, and I'm not going to know that. But the teachers will be able to identify that. And then we say, okay, where does it link up? When do you teach that? And we get that. And then we approach the companies and say, look, we would really like to start doing more to prepare your workforce. And here's what we think we'd like to do. One, we'd like you to come and have people from your company come and speak and be guest presenters in classes at our middle school and high school. And then in the spring, before we do registration, we'd like to invite you to a job fair where you'll be able to talk with kids more about the career aspect of it. But they've already seen you. We've already hopefully established some initial connections by having you in the classroom. If we could start that in the summer, have teachers work on that a little bit in the fall, by spring.
And maybe it's in May after they've all had their testing done or something.
We could do some things. And then you do a job fair in the late spring.
Could we have a job fair before registration? That a lot of
I think that has to happen before registration.
Before one of the districts that was what you're talking about actually had an employee that hooked up the businesses with the teachers and the educators. They had a lot. They had money, resources, but
we're gonna have to get a volunteer.
Well. Well, in school of careers, I was thinking
we get your service missionary.
And how great would it be if you could have Logan High grads who work there come back and say, and even better that we have some kind of an advisory committee. It might be a branch of the foundation. It might be an advisory committee to the board of what can we do to prepare students.
Let's take Mark Felstead and say, Mark, we got kids who want to run their own businesses, little businesses. Come help us with those kids. Teach them what's involved. I mean, it's not just opening the store doors. You got to know how to market. You got to know how to buy the products. You got to know how to
public relations, marketing, finance.
Mm-hmm. That will come out and do
Needhams
that.
Needhams could be involved in that.
Yeah, that's a good business movement. It really, really help.
I would focus on first on where the jobs are.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, job service could say
who
are
the organizations that are hiring 200 people. Let's get
Campbell
the kids
just,
in there.
How many were they going to add? $45 million expansion, they were going to add 250 jobs.
Number, but it's going to be a number like that.
Better
we got 9 minutes.
451. Yeah, thank you.